more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Dream Big Podcast with Bob Goff and friends. I am your host, Scott Schimmel. And this week, it's a special week. It's a special week for a few reasons. One, we are certainly now in springtime. I don't know where in the world or in the country you are, but where we are in San Diego, the birds are chirping and the flowers are blooming and the sun is out. So there's this natural shift that happens this time of year when the world starts to open up. And if you remember, I'm sure you do, a year ago when things were closing down, there was just such a mismatch. And a lot of us went through, really all of us went through being stuck inside, being limited severely by what we do and where we go. Many of us experienced a lot of heartbreak and sadness and loss. And yet here we are in this new springtime, in the week of Easter. And what we're talking about today with an extremely special guest is all of that. It's opening up, it's reemerging, it's rebirth, it's resurrection. It's learning how to get unstuck. As our guest called it today, we've all been through COVID college. And now it's time to take a step back and think about what we've been learning. Well, this week, we have Anne Lamott on the show. She's a giant in the author space. She's written tons of books. She is very much like Bob, actually, in terms of how she sees the world, which is differently than you and I. And what you're going to listen to is a really thoughtful, wise conversation, not just between two friends, but between two people that help us all to see reality, see God in our midst. So I can't wait for you to listen in, and I dare you to listen to the entire episode without having to stop to either breathe in and soak in what Anne just said or to take notes. I dare you to see if you can get through it. Here is this week's conversation between Bob Goff and Anne Lamott.
Annie, thank you so much for making time to be with us. It's so good to see you. I'm looking at your smiling face here on Zoom.
I'm so happy to be here. Let's talk. Let's get down. Well,
another book is out, Dusk, Night, Dawn, on revival and courage. Why this book? Why this time? For those that don't know you, welcome to Earth. But tell us about why this this book and this time.
Well, the last book that came out was 2 years ago, and it was called Almost Everything, Thoughts on Hope, although originally called Doomed. Thoughts on Hope. And I went around the country to promote it at bookstores and churches and whatever. And everybody felt really defeated and scared and sad by what they were enduring, both in the news and the UN papers on climate change and what might be going on at their dining room tables. And that's what the questions were all about. So I sat down and decided to write a book about where do we even start?
Yeah. Did you have trouble? You're an optimist, but you're also a deep thinker. You feel things deeply. Tell us, how do you navigate that when you have things from global climate change to things? You're a sage. You love God, but you're very aware of your surroundings. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think with everything, you start where you are, you know, where your feet or your bed are. And but also, you know, I got sober almost 35 years ago. And I was really, I ended up in that proverbial dark night of the soul that St. John the Divine writes about. And in my experience, all willingness to change, to transform, to do the deep dive begins with pain. And it begins with getting to the point where you're just not willing to stay stuck in that dark night anymore. And so you ask around, you look around, you read, you poke your head out like a prairie dog, and you and you see what is available that might both be kind of like being spritzed with a plant mister, so that you wake back up and you're not stuck in that it's kind, you know, with depression, whether it's nationally or globally or in the family, you sometimes feel like you're crawling through a tube on your elbows, you know. You're pulling your way through and your elbows get really scraped up and it's lonely and it's weird and it's kind of existentially troubling. And And yet you keep going. Something calls us to not give up. And so a lot of Dusk Night Dawn is, what is it that calls us? I'm kind of a cranky left-wing Jesus freak, so that always calls me, that I feel that I'm supposed to take care of the poor, no matter what, one day at a time, however I can. It's really simple. I get thirsty people water, and I help, try to help take care of the poor. But what if Jesus doesn't call you? What calls you? Something bigger than the, you know, the terrible pinball machine of your mind, or your best thoughts, or your most ambitious beckoning hopes and dreams. You know, what calls us? Some kind of creative goodness, some kind of loving compassion and loving awareness that instills in us a desire to do something beautiful with our lives, even though we're kind of fried. We've run out of any more good ideas. You know what keeps me going on bad days sometimes, Bob, is that wonderful thing Mother Teresa said, that no one can do great things, but everyone can do small things with great love. And I think about that all the time, small things with great love. What can I do right now?
One of the things that is everyone listening, if this was their first time listening to you, Annie, they are bedazzled. They're saying that there's a lot there. There's a lot of honesty and truth. I know the last time we spoke, you were talking about bees in a jar and how they get stuck there because they don't know there's no lid. And the way that you see the world is not the way that other people sometimes see it. And so what that'll mean is you're going to be misunderstood from time to time. And as a matter of fact, from moment to moment, how do you deal with being misunderstood? Because we're at a time wherever it is that anybody shapes a worldview, that there's a lot of misunderstanding happen on. So how do you deal with that when people look at you and they just tilt their head about 2 degrees, which just says like, I don't know, what the heck? Well, how do you deal with that?
Well, I deal with it like everyone does, which is that it really hurts my feelings at first to feel misunderstood. And kind of my default place that I land is shame, that I'm being misunderstood, and the desire to correct other people's thinking, which is a completely losing gambit. You know, we don't correct other people's thinking. So I start where I am, and I realize that I'm really usually misunderstanding me, and that I've gotten really confused about thinking that this power or this newspaper, this institution, whatever, the bestseller list, whatever, is an enormous meaning. And I get addicted, you know, it's like the jungle drums start beating and I start thinking, I got to get this to happen. I've got to get this person to respect me. Like, you know, we've talked about this. The world doesn't give you love and respect, and the world can't take it away from you. It's an inside job. It's a job with you and your creator and the deepest part of yourself. And so I usually start by trying to go back into the heart cave. I do radical self-love. I get myself a cup of tea and maybe a handful of, you know, Halloween-sized candy bars. And, or an orange, you know, or mandarin orange. And I do radical self-care and I go into that inside place because the world taught me, my parents and my teachers taught me that what I seek is out there. The right person, the right reviewer, the most important list, the most, the most public possible acclamation. Well, Sam, my son, did a podcast and he really wants you to do it. And I said, oh, I can get Bob to do anything. So
done. I'll bark like a dog.
Yeah. But he did a podcast with the great composer, Paul Williams, who like me was a drug addict and alcoholic. And Paul told Sam, I mean, they both cried, but Paul told Sam that the night he won the Oscar 30 years ago for that Barbra Streisand movie that Paul composed the music for, he stood before probably 100 million people receiving the highest accolade the world can bestow on a singer, songwriter. He said it bought him 24 hours, right? It bought him 24 hours of self-esteem, 24 hours of feeling that he had finally arrived and was a person of lasting value. And so he realized and he reminds us, it's an inside job. It's not out there. It has to do with love. It has to do with union with God. It has to do with union with beloved community. And it has to do with union with the poor. over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think of that idea that if somebody's questioning sometimes my conclusion, it can feel like they're attacking my character.
Yeah.
And I need to remind myself they just have reached a different conclusion about kindness, or they reached a different conclusion about a priority. And their priority, what is number one for them, isn't even in the top 50 for me.
Yeah,
I'm back to Matthew 25. Hungry people, thirsty people, sick people, strange people, naked people, people in jail, and James, widows and orphans. So like that is the roll call that I think. It's not like a conclusion I reached. I'm no theologian. I just read what Jesus said. He said, like, you want to meet me? This is where I'll be. I'll be right at, I'll be at the kids' table surrounded by these people.
Right. And also he said, a lot of times, he said to his disciples, who were just so erratic and kind of frantic half the time and going, when do we take over, Lord? You know, is it our turn yet? And he'd say, you know, you all seem a little crazy to me right now, and I think you need to eat. He's like a Jewish mother. And he says, go down to the beach. Somebody will come in with some fish soon. Start a fire, cook some fish, have something to eat. Nourish yourselves. We'll talk later.
Yes, I love that. We have a tradition on our block here. We live down by the water in San Diego, and we invite all the neighbors over for like a Sunday morning, like sunrise service. And then we have like the first meal, because that was the first thing. Jesus didn't, here he rises from the dead. I would have made a speech and he just made breakfast.
Right.
Yeah, to your point, it's like, yeah, you look hungry.
Isn't that the first thing he does when he comes back?
That's it.
He makes everyone breakfast. Yeah, you should eat.
Yeah, I really like that idea.
I do too.
Maybe it's just like some of the things, the spectacular things that we think will dazzle God is a project or gaining momentum with many people. And then to keep seeing this reverse kind of economy that's happening in our lives. And then not giving too many people agency. I spoke at a place where you were. It was at a university. It was a little bit later, but I spoke and I thought I just did an okay job. And I got a text message from somebody in the crowd, and it just had two words. It said, "You suck."
I'm like,
Dad. So, but one of the things that is going to happen is that I have evidently didn't hit it out of the ballpark for that person, or they were teasing, or they seemed pretty serious. They didn't have a smiley face. So, what do you do when you swing for the fences? There's somebody listening that's stuck in traffic or on the side of the road, and they feel it's a relationship that's gone awry. It's a job that they wanted, they got turned down to, an internship they wanted. What do you do when you get one of those, like, you suck messages from somebody, whether they intended it in good fun or in total seriousness?
Well, first of all, I am so in the wrong profession because I hate criticism. I'm very sensitive, and I came this way. God made me this way. It's why I'm a decent writer after 45 years. But when I in the 50s, when I was coming up, there was a book called The Overly Sensitive Child that was for parents such as mine whose lives were so difficult because they had children like me. So it took a long time for me to realize it's a beautiful way to be very sensitive and permeable, you know, and you can get into me deeply and I'm available to come deeply into you. But by the same token, I just hate criticism and I get it. You know, I'm a writer and I got the first review I got on this book, Dust Night Dawn said, "You suck."
Oh no!
You suck worse than Bob Goff, it said.
That's a pretty low mark.
Yeah. I got on the last book, I mostly got good reviews. I got a review at the Chicago Tribune, which is syndicated. So hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people read it. And it said, "This book for me felt like being at the back fence with one of the Kardashians."
Oh,
and then I thought, well, I love the Kardashians.
Yeah, but your tender heart, you're like, what do you think?
I know. So what I do is what, you know, I pick up the 200 pound phone and I either go find my husband and I say, I hate all of life and everybody, and I'm not going to do this anymore. And I think I could make a living painting fire hydrants, and I'd be good at it.
Yes, you would.
I'm very careful. And or I pick up the 200-pound phone, right, and I say to somebody, want to go get a bag of Hershey's Kisses and then go to Target, you know, and we'll cruise together in masks. We're both all vaccinated right now, all the older friends I have. And, you know, if it's something that really has hurt me, I just pray for Jesus to help me take the bad pair of glasses off where I think that what people say has to do with me or my work. And I put the good glasses on where I just see people, they're hurt. They feel really sad. They didn't get to be writers, or they got to be writers and it didn't go very well. And I put the good pair of glasses on where I just see another person who's not doing very well. And I think very, you know, maturely, you get to think what you think. And, you know, and I'm not going to try to convince you, because you can't help me feel that I'm a person of value. I got to deal with that. But I wish you all the best. And can I get you a glass of water while I'm up? I mean, yeah. I don't get, Jesus doesn't say, get all thirsty people a glass of water if they agree with your political opinions, you know?
Yeah.
Jesus says, just get thirsty people some water. Thank you. I'll help, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking if I only had a day to live, I wouldn't spend it with somebody I knew was going to betray me.
Right.
I wouldn't say, let's get dinner together.
Right.
One of the things that I think a lot of people emerging out of this year of isolation are dealing with depression. They're feeling separated. They're feeling disconnected. Give us a couple words of what you've been thinking, maybe experiencing around that. And give us some perspective and hope. On this, like, people are emerging, and not all of us, like, went in as caterpillars and came out as butterflies, that we may have gone in as butterflies and come out as caterpillars, just feel like, oh, yikes. So talk to us about that.
Well, you know, the caterpillar really has to stay in the cocoon until life and God feel that this being is ready to emerge. And it's very tempting if you're the depressed person or the flattened person still in the cocoon, it's tempting for people to try to hack you out, you know, with their good ideas and their plans for your life. But that destroys the caterpillar. The caterpillar then doesn't develop its eyes, its wings, its antenna. And so the most incredible thing you can do for people who are really down and suffering is to just leave them there. Leave them there. I am willing to show up, which is, I think, my superpower. If people are sad or dying, or their child is dying, or they're drunk, or they're just, they've lost their jobs and they're defeated, I don't try to pump them up. I don't hand them nice Christian bumper stickers that God never gives you more to handle. You know, I'm not positive God said that, A.
Yeah.
And B, it's kind of abusive if somebody's really sad. In Dusk Night Dawn, my friend Mary says you should never let God know how much more you can bear, and that you sort of treat it like you would a trainer at the gym, and sort of hint that you really can't lift that much because you have a prior back injury. And hint, you know, I said hint at liability. But anyway, you don't hand out bumper stickers. I am willing to sit with people and to let them feel terrible and to let the grace, you know, I've heard, this is in another tradition, but I've heard that in the triune definition of God, there's God, the Father, Mother, and the lover, and there's Jesus, the son and daughter, the beloved, and that the Holy Spirit is the animating energy of love between them, right? And so if somebody's feeling awful, I just sit there and try to be some kind of channel to the love between them and their loving parent, you know, their Jewish mother or their just darling grandfather who taught them how to whittle. Because little by little, 100% of the time, life will pull you back to your feet and dust you off. Another thing I tell people, and it's wonderful because this is spring, is the Special Olympics are always held in May and June. And if you don't know how to live, or you don't have a very good operating instruction for hardship and dark times, go to the Special Olympics, because they will trick you out of self-pity. I'm very into self-pity, don't get me wrong. But what happens at the Special Olympics is that you just see life's rules absolutely turn on its head. So for instance, if you and I are in a foot race, So we're doing the 50-yard, like, lurch.
Yes.
With the sore hips and ankles. And you fall behind. I'm kind of secretly glad because I'm going to win. And I kind of secretly, with life's rules, want to do better than you. At the Special Olympics, they go back for each other. It doesn't matter to them if one of them winning isn't what it's about. If we were Special Olympians, I would go back for you. And if you have gotten spaced out and taken off your shoe, I'm going to help you put it back on. I'm going to pull you up, and I'm going to dust you off. And then we're going to both head back towards the same direction. It's like Ram Dass said famously that when all is said and done, we're all just walking each other home.
Yeah, well said.
That's a really huge tool for people to know about, is the Special Olympics.
Yeah, I think it's an awareness and empathy for the people around us, but kind of head on a swivel. You're an observer of life. You're constantly, for all these years you've been writing, you've let us kind of eavesdrop on what's going on. I'm thinking about Peter Pan and the swallows making their nests in the eaves, because they said, we make our nests there because we love to hear the stories. And I'm like, oh, and so I feel like so many of us for decades have been kind of swallows in the nest. Help people organize their ideas about their feelings. What do you do at a practical level? You have an idea, something strikes you, are you a note taker? For the writers out there, they're interested. They saw Anne Lamott was going to be talking to me, and they're like, they've got their pens out, and they're waiting to hear that, the steps, the program. I don't think you have a program and steps, but I think there's habits. Tell us about those.
I'll tell you what there is. There's a really strict discipline. And I've been doing this. I've been published for 45 years or something. And the only way for me to have creative freedom is discipline. I don't wait for inspiration. I mean, that's just such a delusion. Someone once asked what inspired me. And I said, you know, debt, debt, people pleasing, mental illness, and the desire for revenge. But also I have stories that I love to tell and that I think what might be medicine for people who are having a hard time. And the way I tell them is I sit down, you know, I just shout at my writing students, butt in chair, you got to meet me halfway. Then you sit down. I have my students, I don't have students anymore, but have a 1-inch picture frame on your desk. All you're going to do is what you can see through that 1-inch picture frame this morning. And it might be one passage, one story, one memory, one moment, an insight. That's all you're going to do. And you're going to get to do it really, really badly. You know, there's the whole, all of, every single thing I know is in my book, Bird by Bird. But E.L. Doctorow said the best line. He said, writing is like driving at night with the headlights on. You can only see a little ways in front of you, but you can make the whole journey that way. And that's really true of everything we do. That's how we start a new life. That's how we start retirement. That's how we enter in the life of a parent who's beginning to get dementia. That's how we enter into parenthood. You can only see a little ways in front of you, but you can make the whole journey that way. So you have to get started.
So good. I'm thinking there's a verse in Hebrews 11. It says, this is what faith is. It's confidence in what you're hoping for and assurance of what you haven't seen yet. Tell us what you're hoping for. Tell us, I mean, our next breath, our next day, but you have some hopes. You've got a family, you've got people who care for you and that you care for. Tell us the hopes of Anne Lamott.
My hopes are always, always to just be closer and closer and closer to God. But I'm so easily distracted. And so I hope that my husband and I and son and his son stay really, really healthy and well. I hope all of those humanly things you hope for, because I just love them so, so much. I hope my best friend's son just died. He was only 23, but six weeks ago. And I just hope that she keeps in this place of both mourning and healing. She wrote something I wrote about in Dusk Night Dawn called Lunch Money Faith, about every day, if she just turns towards God, she gets enough faith for that day. Like in California, we always got on Tuesdays a quarter because it was hot dog day. And
of
you
course,
got
yeah.
a quarter and you got a hot dog, you got a bag of chips, Lay's, and you got a little carton of this incredibly good cold orange juice. It was always a quarter, never more, never less. But she's been getting lunch money, Faith, every day for like 13 years, and even in his passing. And my greatest hope is that she can begin to feel the resurrection, his and the family's. And my greatest hope is that somehow, you know, Rumi, who I love, the mystic from Persian mystic, said, through love, all pain will turn to medicine. And my hope is that we've all been through COVID college for a year, and it was grim, it was grief struck, we were furious, we just didn't know what to. My hope is that in COVID college, we learned to be more attentive to life. We couldn't go out very often. We became more compassionate. We saw the lines at the food pantries. We became more gentle with ourselves. We became more generous. And my hope is that that pain that we went through is turning into medicine for a world that it can be so cold and so dark. I just hope we can be a little bit of light.
That is not just a statement, but a benediction. That's really, I see that is your blessing for us. Annie, we love you. I hope you can just receive this on behalf of all of us. You are a treasure. Makes me, I'm emotionally incontinent, so I like cry, but I want to let you know just how much you mean to me and so many others. Thanks for being fearsome, courageous on behalf of all of us with your words, for being willing to be misunderstood as you describe your faith and you borrow from the traditions that are around. But man, I talk to you and I feel like I have a better angle on just how much God loves us. So thank you for that gift.
Well, I just love you, Bob. I'll see you soon, okay?
Small things with great love. For you who were trying to figure out how do we reemerge out of this long season and do it well, to get back on track with our big ambitions, to get back on track with our ordinary lives, there's a roadmap. Small things with great love. So I'm so appreciative of that conversation with Bob and Ann. And one resource we want to point you towards is Bob Weekly. And what you'll find are 2 to 3 times a week, video messages from Bob. It's almost the behind the scenes, Bob is your guide through life as he riffs on the ways he's processing through life and living a life of faith and adventure and ambition and dreams. And a part of Bob Weekly, not only are the video messages, but some thoughtful resources, worksheets, reflection guides. And so if you haven't considered it, I would encourage you to, in this transition back to life, that might be the very specific thing that you need to guide you. The other thing is we would love it if you're willing to give us a review, to give this podcast a review. And it does a lot, actually, every time you're on iTunes or wherever you're getting your podcasts, to leave a review about what you're getting out of this, what you're learning, how it's impacting you. And our idea, our hope would be that more people get to listen into these conversations. So that's it for this week. Can't wait to join you again next week for another episode of the Dream Big Podcast with Bob Goff and friends. Well, happy new year, everybody, from the Dream Big team. And if you don't know what that means, it means this. 2020 is over. It's a new year. You made it. We all made it. And no matter what happened in your life, this year is a new opportunity for you and the big dreams that you're holding on to. So this year, here's an opportunity. Let Bob Goff be your guide as he walks through every single week a new teaching video and some content and curriculum to help you grow. It's called Bob Weekly. It just launched, and we'd love to invite you to sign up today. Go to bobgoff.com/weekly to learn more and get started. It's only $8.99 a month. Now's the time. New year, new you, new Bob.